Good morning or evening from wherever you are, and welcome or welcome back to the Bylines podcast series. Thank you so much for joining us. This is our third episode of the series. Where has the weeks gone, Henry? Where have they gone? We had a great discussion with Henry about LGBTQ plus History Month. We had some great interviewees, the founder of On Your Gaydar podcast and Hurts Pride. They were brilliant. And as you've seen in the title, this episode, we're focusing on International Day of Forests. And again, we've got some amazing interviewees you'll definitely want to hear from. But first, as always, let's introduce the team. We've got Henry here. Do you want to just introduce everyone, Henry?
Hello, I'm Henry. I'm the co-host on the Bylines podcast, and I also write for Central Bylines. We also have Emily, Anna, and our editor, Jules, and of course, Alex and Maddie.
And Maddie, yay. So, Henry, you've done a lot of work the last couple of weeks for International Forest Day in terms of what interviews and information you could get. So it's only fair you introduce, what is International Forest Day? Why is it important?
So basically, on the 21st of March, there's a variety of events to promote awareness of the value of forests and trees in general. And a fun fact, 80% of the world's natural biodiversity on land is in forests. So forests are just a very important part of our lives, even if you don't think about it all too often. So every year, countries are urged to arrange local, national, and international activities that involve forests and trees, such as tree planting programs and things to help forests out.
See, I didn't know that statistic, and I'm pretty sure most people wouldn't know that, as well as so many other statistics about what's going on with our environment. So, Henry, I know that you live in a big city. It's Birmingham, right?
Yeah, up in Birmingham.
So Birmingham, that's the second biggest city in the UK. England, rather. I don't know. One of those. Are there any events that are taking place that you're aware of? Because I do actually visit Birmingham a lot, and I've noticed, as a whole, the lack of green. I shall just leave that.
Yeah, it's a bit of a concrete jungle. And I introduced a really lovely person who works and volunteers for Birmingham Friends of the Earth. His name is Sanjeev Madaru.
So would you be able to introduce yourself?
I'm Sanjeev Mahandru. So I've been volunteering for the Friends of the Earth, I think maybe 5-10 years maybe. I've lost count of the years, actually. So I get involved in their campaigning, so road building and pollution issues in Birmingham. But across the scale, really, just overall with climate and the environment as well.
Yeah, I can imagine that's quite big, especially since, like, obviously you have like a lot of pollution in places like Birmingham, and it's very, very urban.
A lot of cities. Like, well, in the UK, generally, officially, it's between 40 and 50,000 people in the UK die from air pollution, officially.
But
indirectly, it could be double or triple that, remember, because when you die, you could just say heart failure, lung, or other issues. There could be a link, basically, there is a link to air pollution. And even people's mental health, like if a place is more polluted, then obviously it affects people's hearts. So people have heart attacks. So you could put on the death certificate a heart attack, but it's linked to air pollution.
It's really bad, like hearing about that as well. Like, loads of people get things like lung cancer and stuff like that, and people just. Would you be able to just explain what Birmingham Friends of the Earth does, like what you do as like campaigner?
We've been based in Birmingham, I think, or active for I think the last 35 years.
Yeah.
So we have got a office and the building in Digbeth in Birmingham.
Yeah.
So basically, we try to concentrate, because anyway, the list is endless. We try to concentrate and focus on campaigning issues in Birmingham, generally air pollution. So, there's the Tyesley incinerator, which is based in Birmingham. It's one of the biggest polluters in Birmingham, and that's owned by Birmingham City Council. So to me, sorry, then we should be cancer hypocrites. You know, I think a lot of cancers, they talk about it. You know, they talk the speech, but they don't actively basically take action. So yeah. things within their remit to reduce pollution, they can do overnight if they wanted to, but they don't.
Yeah, like...
Yeah, so what we do, we try to basically help them to basically hopefully make the right decisions. So we email the councillors, we write to them, we protest, you know, we do protest marches, so by social media, face-to-face, we basically deal with them. And just we try... So they can make better decisions that's affecting everyone in Birmingham. But sadly, you know, I think a lot of governments, they do have a different agenda from us.
Yeah.
So sorry to be cynical, but I'm cynical.
Don't worry. I understand. And yeah, I think it's, well, it's like we kind of need like a lot of like regreening in places like Birmingham as well. And also like, do you think like that there is kind of a need to like reforest, regreen like parts of Birmingham, because obviously we have like a lot of like urban kind of desolate areas that all it is just empty lots.
100%. I mean, any day we could do with more green areas. I mean, I live in Smethwick, which is B67. So yeah. Luckily for me, we got a forest, Worley Woods, which is doorstep, which is a community basically park forest. So yeah. That's actually owned not by the councils, but basically by a private charity.
Yeah.
But I mean, because I'm an estate agent as well, I cover all of Birmingham, but there's many areas, which is it's concrete jungle.
Yeah.
And try to save money for councils, like just a simple thing like a roundabout.
Yeah.
You know, they even block paving roundabouts, but before 20 years ago, roundabouts used to be like a haven of greenery, grass, flowers, or, you know, it'd be properly landscaped.
Yeah.
But because of money, cost, things like that, they'd actually block paving over roundabouts to save money.
Yeah.
So they're talking about greenering, but then on the other one hand, they're saying this, but on the other hand, they're block paving areas that they don't need to.
Yeah, like there's a lot of areas like you could just plant for like native flowers, native grasses and stuff like that really, really easily. But
of course, they can,
but like there's not really a cost incentive to. But obviously, for like public health, the well-being of the area as well, like things like that, it's just they're just very important, I think.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. So it's like just road building. We, you know, basically before they have road building projects, cycling issues or pollution, you know, a lot of councils up and down the country, they have a consultation happening.
Yeah.
So what Friends of the Earth do in their capacity as a climate environment organization, we basically get involved in the consultation. So they do ask, you know, what's your opinion on that and how can you basically help? So we do actually respond to this consultation, because at the end of the day, a lot of us can basically talk about it, but how can it look? If you're living a day-to-day life, maintaining a job, a house and a family,
yeah.
A lot of people haven't got the time or energy to basically get involved with councillors or the councillors in what they're doing that's affecting them directly.
Yeah, like a lot of people just don't have that time because, yeah, most people just live busy lives and they can't,
yeah,
I guess,
of course,
afford to do that. And I guess mentally as well, like you can't afford to like just campaign for absolutely every single little thing, because
of course
it will just overwhelm you.
We're like Friends of the Earth are basically we're all volunteers.
Yeah.
And we are restricted in what we could do because of our numbers and because of people's basically time as well.
Yeah.
But then I feel like, okay, I'm in a way in the money industry, but I get involved in climate, environment, and my. I think if everyone did a little bit on their doorstep, they can make a difference.
Yeah.
But if that's the thing, you know, I think you've got to have that bit of passion on it as well, because, you know, like you're thinking about other things. Like by the end of the day, we're spending maybe 3-4 hours every 10 social media. You understand?
Yeah.
So I think more people can spend time on it. It's all right talking about it, but if they're quite active, you know, any day, I feel we do make a difference.
Yeah,
I
I
think
think
that's
so
why
too.
if you feel we don't make a difference, we'll be totally disillusioned. You understand? You're
Yeah,
thinking,
completely.
why am I doing it? Am I wasting my time? But like, if I explain a recent project in Sanwal, which is just outside Birmingham, Sanwal, the Sanwal Council, they built a cycle path. So in the face of it, you would say, look, a cycle path is a very good thing.
Yeah.
But I'm a cyclist. I don't own a vehicle. I got rid of my car 5 or 7 years ago. So that's even, to me, a small thing like that is a big thing, is because it's making a statement.
Yeah.
And
Make
like,
it
it's
safe
like.
As well.
I think I'm the only estate agent I know where we don't own any vehicles. I cycle everywhere. So when I do any viewings, inspections, basically, I turn up on the cycle. Because it's all right talking about it, but I think you have to live it as well.
The most interesting part of your interview, Henry, that I found was that he just cycles everywhere, doesn't he? He doesn't own a car, and most of his colleagues don't own a car. And as myself, as a car user, it does like make me question like the unnecessary journeys I take. But I do try actually and not drive as much as I can just because of the petrol prices. But walking and cycling is definitely such a better option, and it's not that difficult, is it, depending on your situation. So as well, Emma, who's a new member of the Bylines podcast team, interviewed the Green Party candidate for the Ecclesall ward in Sheffield, who is striving to make the peaks more natural. Here's her interview.
Work for the the tearing up of the roads and what the backlash of that was, both within the green area of the council and from the public as well?
Well, I mean, I can try my best. Obviously, I can't speak for the council. I'm the Green Party's candidate for Ecclesall ward, but I was on the front line during the protests to stop Sheffield street trees being chopped down by the council. But as I understand it, starting in about 2012, there was a private finance initiative contract signed with a multinational company called AMI PLC. I think one of the biggest ever signed by Sheffield City Council. It was £2.2 billion, and it was meant to last for 25 years. So, and I think that the contract was mainly to manage the highways of Sheffield. So that would be, you know, repairing potholes, but also looking after the pavements, street lighting, things like that. But also in the contract was the management of Sheffield's highways trees. So that's what we, you know, see as the street trees. So I think when the contract was signed, obviously people who signed it thought, oh, this is great, you know, it's a good thing, it's going to look after our roads, they're going to have, you know, them properly maintained, this is all wonderful. However, I don't think they'd fully thought about the backlash. At the beginning of the contract, there was a consultancy commissioned to assess the tree stock in Sheffield. And as far as I understand it, that consultancy, you know, an arboriculturist consultancy, I think called Acorn, they assessed the tree stock in Sheffield. We're talking about around 35,000 trees. You know, it's a huge amount of street trees. From their consultancy, they told the council that about 1,000 of the trees in the city probably needed to be chopped down. You know, these are trees that are dead or dying or diseased or unsafe, those sorts of things. And then there was some that needed pruning to maintain them. However, in the contract, there was a target to cut down half of Sheffield's street trees over the period, the 25-year period of the contract. Now, if you put a target into a contract with a multinational, then they are under obligation to follow that target. And it doesn't really matter whether they're chopping down healthy trees or unhealthy trees if they've got a target to chop down trees. So we got this unhappy situation where the council through their contractor, Amey PLC, were chopping down hundreds and then thousands of trees. And the protesters, understandably, were getting pretty upset and saying, no, we don't want you to chop down these trees. This is crazy. The protesters, you know, started very small, just a few individuals, and over time got, you know, international coverage and massive support, but trees were still being chopped down and people are getting more and more desperate. You know, it was just like it was a horrible, horrible situation. The protesters, through freedom of information requests, managed to find out about this secret target, about having to cut down 17,500 trees over the period of the contract. And yet the council were saying, no, there's no target. All these trees that we're chopping down, they need to be felled. But that was rubbish. And it was found out to be rubbish. But the council, by this point, had got so deep in, you know, it's one of those where you're just throwing good money after bad. So they were just like, we can't lose face now. We're just going to have to keep on going. So they brought in the police to oppress the protesters. You know, it got horrible. You know, it got to the point where you had, for example, a Green councillor, like a member of the council, being arrested by the council, along with many other protesters, and threatened with prison time, you know, for trying to protect these trees that didn't need to be felled. So it was all totally mad. And it's definitely a dark point in Sheffield's history, one that I certainly don't want to be forgotten, because we have to remember that people in high places often make terrible decisions, and we need to remember those decisions so that we can make them better next time.
Definitely, definitely. So what sort of things were the protesters and the Green Party candidates doing to be arrested?
Well, it wasn't a party political issue. Protesters came from all walks of life and all political denomination. It was not about one party against the other. At the time, it was a Labour council in Sheffield, but you know, there was people from the Lib Dems, people from the Greens. I'm sure there was people from the Labour Party too who were totally against what was happening. For my part, I remember the first protests that really became sort of significant were down on a street called Rustlings Road, near one of Sheffield's most famous parks, where the police and felling teams came at something like 5 a.m. in the morning to come and chop down trees, because if they came during the day, then the protesters would, you know, stand underneath the trees, protect the trees, hug the trees to keep them safe. We had to get to the tree that the teams were going to cut down, basically, before they got there, so that we could create a human shield around the trees. Then when that was working, you know, they still wanted to carry on with this insanity. So then they brought in security guards. You'd turn up and there would be like 20, you know, proper high-vis clad security guards with CCTV camera recording devices on them to protect the guy with the chainsaw from the peaceful protesters.
That's horrible. Did it work? Like, did your protests at least...
Yeah, I mean, our protests did work. And today, well, as of 2018, the felling has been paused, basically because they saw the error of their ways through people power. They were forced to see that this is not working. It wasn't working for anybody, certainly not for Sheffield. Now they're just starting an independent inquiry headed by a senior former civil servant to investigate what went wrong and what can be learned from all the horror that happened, you know, all the dishonesty and lies in the town hall. We've got to move forward from this, but we certainly shouldn't forget what happened.
Definitely, definitely. So could you tell me a bit about what's going on this weekend then?
Yeah.
Try and move forward positively?
Yeah, definitely. So this weekend, on Sunday, we've got a really exciting event in Sheffield. Two people who were involved in the street tree protest throughout, a woman called Jackie Bellamy and a woman called Eve Wood. They've put together a documentary that was filmed throughout the years of the protest, you know, so it's filmed, you know, on the streets, and it's a feature-length documentary, and there's going to be a very exciting premiere of the film at the Sheffield City Hall on Sunday, with the doors opening at 1 o'clock and the showing an introduction starting at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So that's great. It's called The Felling, and it's all about the tale of the battle to save Sheffield's trees.
I don't know if you know, but International Day of the Forests is coming up this month to kind of, I think it's about 10 years since it was put in place to help encourage, you know, against the climate crisis that's happening. Yeah. Do you know anything about it, or...
Well, I know, as you say, that it's coming up. It's on Monday, the 21st of March, International Day of the Forests. And as you say, founded, I think, back in 2012 by the UN. It's a really good thing to connect up with the felling film on Sunday and tree planting, because, it's incredible to think. And this is something I learned, I think it was from one of the ecologists who was working for the council, but he was also heavily involved with protesting and protecting the trees. He taught me that Sheffield is actually an urban forest. Now, if you go into certain areas of Sheffield, there's so many mature trees along the streets that it would actually be considered a forest. If you took away the houses, you know, so next time you're walking through Sheffield, you don't have to, you know, sort of imagine that you're actually walking through a forest. And one of the things that was really interesting about that, and why it was so important to keep the forest of Sheffield, have you heard of tawny owls?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Well, cool. Well, Sheffield has a large population of tawny owls. And tawny owls are like an ambush predator. And they have, their habit is not to kind of fly around looking for prey, but they have a kind of a route around their territory where they go to a perch up in a tree. So they need a street tree, a big mature street tree. They sit in that street tree and they look down at the road, and they look for little mice, and they pop down and they get them. So a tawny owl in Sheffield will move along the road from tree to tree. And if you take away those mature trees, you're taking away the habitat for the tawny owls.
Yeah, that's, I didn't even think about how like that would affect animals, because you think, oh, because Sheffield is a city, you don't think animals will be living in the ones on the streets, but you've proved me wrong quite
no,
obviously.
Sheffield is a forest.
I've never thought of it like that.
Sheffield are a forest, yeah.
Definitely. I think that's a great, great message to end on there for everybody. Apart from that, is there anything else that you feel I haven't asked you about that you'd quite like to get across?
No, I mean, it's been great talking to you today, Emma. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure to have you.
Yeah, if people want to get in touch with me about ideas of how they can protect or promote nature in their neck of the woods, they're very welcome to.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Oh, well, thank you so, so much. That was so nice of you to go through all that and go to so much trouble for me and to wear green, which is so, so apt.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Emma.
Thank you.
Thank you, Emma, for the great interview. Now, what do locals around Sheffield think of the issue?
How do you feel about the Save the Trees campaign in this area in particular?
I've definitely noticed like the posters being up, like there's one on the road that I always walk down, so I always notice it. I never feel like I do anything about it. Like, I see it and I'm like, oh, okay, cool, like, someone's wanting to cut that tree down, people aren't letting it, but I'm never like, I need to do something about this. I've not really noticed anyone like coming to cut them down or leaving them. And
I've not seen the council doing anything about it. I've seen that the sort of the awareness has got a lot more on social media, and the posters have been renewed over the last couple of years as well. So there's obviously still definitely a presence about it, but yeah.
So this is Save the Trees. Yeah. I have seen posters over a few years, really, and I live close to a street where the trees have been saved, although I don't actually live on it. So I do know that things have happened to save trees. And I love trees. I don't particularly like it when the pavements are all over the place because of the roots, but I do like trees.
So I don't actually know a lot about the Save the Trees. From what I know is what my friends have told me. But I feel like as a student, we don't really hear a lot from the council, and a lot of what we do here does come through the university itself. And so they do need to push it through that route and let us know that way.
And then, would that be okay?
Yeah. All Is right. it just about cutting the trees down in Sheffield?
Yeah. So what have you seen? Have you seen the council doing anything in particular?
I've seen some of the bigger trees on some of the streets. Obviously, they've had the ribbons round because people want to save them. I think trees are really important. They make us feel good. They're good for mental well-being. We need trees, obviously, you know, as part of our life to...
I mean, I'll be honest, it's one of those things that I kept seeing throughout the years and didn't pay much attention to. I'll be honest, I was of the opinion that, you know, they probably did need taken down because of the roads, but the roads look all right to me now, so it seems as though, like, somehow it worked, basically. So I don't really notice them that much, really, other than the posters and everything. So, yeah, it all looks sorted to me, I don't know.
So, Henry, are you or have you been doing anything, not just on International Forest Day, but in general for the environment? Because I know you're quite passionate about the topic.
Yeah, well, I'm a bit intense about recycling. And yeah, I don't drive. That's just a personal thing. I just don't drive. First of all, at a practical level, cars are expensive, and the area I live in is basically in the you have to pay £8 for the clean air tax.
Oh yeah.
If you are in Birmingham City Centre, and yeah, I just think I'd rather take the bus, take the train. It's easier, and it's more like cost effective, more environmentally friendly, all that. So yeah. I think that's quite important as well.
Yeah, I saw a survey that nearly 3/4 of people in England, which is like 73%, said they were concerned about the consequences of a lesser variety of plants, animal life, etc., all through the environment. But are they taking these worries into action, do you think? Who's actually doing anything?
Yeah, like the thing is, I think a lot of people don't really know where to start. And the way that society is kind of structured right now doesn't really make it easy. Because people, for example, will care about sustainable power, but they might rent. They can't afford to just put solar panels on top of their house. They can't afford to get a windmill attached to their house because they don't own their house. Or like packaging, things like that, like plastic packaging, single use plastic packaging. A lot of people can't not use that because that's not really within their budget. And kind of society is kind of not really structured in that way. But I think a lot of people are kind of trying to get towards doing things like that as well. A lot more people are planting like native flora around things. And I've seen a lot more like environmental projects and tree planting projects going on. So that's good.
I think your point earlier on people not actually being aware on what they can do to help is really important. That's why, again, I think it's important people are researching, and that's the first step, isn't it? It's International Forest Day. It's an excuse to start doing something, I think. And it's okay if you haven't before. There's no time like today, I think.
Yeah. And again, a special mention to our interviewees and the rest of the team. next month will be our fourth podcast, which is a bit mad, and you will hear from us very soon.
Thank
Take care and happy International Day of Forests, everyone.